So this Sunday, we're going to talk about grace. And the title of the sermon for today comes from a series that we're working on that's based off of our new vision statement as a church. And while I was working on this sermon, I tried to define grace, and I think I spent probably a couple hours, and I had probably 20 minutes worth of discussion just about trying to define grace itself. And so at some point, I had to give up on that and decided we're just going to talk about a very specific thing today, and that's just growing in grace by itself. One of the best aspects about this particular statement, this vision statement that we have as a church, is that it gives a really useful image of us all as a tree working together in our community. It's not just a compelling image that helps us see ourselves within our community, but it also gives us an opportunity to refresh a little bit on middle school biology. And today's no exception. We're going to talk specifically about the growth of a tree. So, go to the next one there. All right, there's words on the side. It says growing isn't easy. So a tree grows in rings from the outer edges. Each spring, the tree grows a substantial amount compared to what it does throughout the rest of the year. And you can see that's the yellowish part, like the paler part there. And then when the summer comes in full swing, the tree continues to grow, but as the weather dries up a bit, the growth slows down pretty significantly. And as it gets hotter and there's less and less for it to use and to grow, that's where that dark band comes in, because the growth gets a lot more dense. And then during the winter months and fall months as well, the tree goes dormant and stops growing. So if you cut a tree down and take a cross-section, you can count how old any given tree is just by taking that cross-section and counting up all the rings. There's one for each year. This particular cross-section is from a 90-year-old black spruce tree. I think we've had a little bit of time to take a look at that, so I'm going to move to the next one. So here, I just went onto Microsoft Paint as well as I could and counted up the years. But you can see it's a pretty small tree. It fits within that person's hand. And it grows fairly slowly. But that pace of growth is different throughout its life. Growth is determined by a few factors. How available nutrients are, how long the summer is, how warm and wet things are. But you can see one of the bigger factors as well is the age of the tree. Just look at the difference in the radius here between the years. In the first 5 years of life, the tree grows pretty substantially. Just like right there to there. The difference in diameter there from its first year of life is really big. It's doubled, tripled, and then a little bit more than that, whatever the word for times five would be. But as you go out a little bit more, just 5 years more, the growth is slowed down just a little bit. It's just a little bit of a shorter distance. The next line there is 20 years worth of growth. And you can see it's close to the same amount of growth in the first five. So the growth has slowed down by almost half. And then the last line for 30 years is less than half the width of the growth in 5 years. And then whatever's left there is 60 years worth of growth. So after that, I couldn't count any slighter. It was just getting too blurry, and it was too much work for my eyes. I see poorly already. But there we go. But before I start talking about differences in growth here and might offend anyone a little bit older than me, I would remind you that I'm pretty close to 30 myself. My growth chart there is in the slighter area. But even in the 20s, this tree's growth has slowed significantly from what it was in the early years of its life. They say that it's really hard to teach an old dog new tricks, but I think if we look at this tree, we could say it's really hard to teach any dog new tricks, as long as they're a little older than a puppy. I think what this illustrates to me is that people like this tree are creatures of habit, and it's hard to break our habits. Once we get into a flow, it's hard to change things. Hard to change things up. It's hard to break habits, to be open to new things. It's hard to be vulnerable again. And this is less of an age thing than I think this might have illustrated, because I would say I struggle with this as much as any of you would. But being vulnerable, breaking old habits, being open to new things, I think that's what it means to grow in grace. When we physically grow, we get growing pains, we get aches, because it takes a lot of work to do that sort of thing. And I think that this picture of a 90-year-old spruce tree shows that growth is a lot of work for nature too, in other ways. It's not just a physical thing for us. This image of a 90-year-old tree really shows us that as a 90-year-old church, rich with history and traditions and legacy, if we want to grow in grace and grow in our ability to show and extend God's grace to our community, we need to be willing to struggle a little bit, to work at things, and we need to be in it patiently and for the long haul. Any growth we try to go about is going to be slow. It's going to take time. It's going to be a difficult process. To find out how we might begin to grow in grace, I think we can just look at that passage from 2 Corinthians again. Throughout that passage, I find it quite confusing, where Paul's working hard to make things as difficult to understand as possible by including the word boast as often as he might, and using as many double negatives and retractions and weird sentence structures as possible. But the essence of that passage, I think, is that in weakness, God grants us grace. It's not when we're strong that that happens. But that raises another question as well. What does it mean to be strong or weak in Paul's sense? Is it the physical? Should we refrain from exercise for fear of losing God's love for us? Is it a financial thing? Should we all become a little bit penniless so that we're forced to rely more on God for our sustenance? Or is it a personal inner weakness that we should strive for? Should we be less sure of our convictions and trust in God more? I think the answer for this is all of the above to some extent, and none of them. Grace is, at its most basic definition, the unearned favor and kindness that we receive from God. Physical weakness, poverty, or a lack of confidence aren't surefire pathways to getting God's grace, and none of them are requirements either. But what all of them do is help us to rely on God, to be more open to new revelations, and to be less sure of what we think or what we want, and be more invested in God's plan. When Paul's talking about weakness here, it's a weakness that helped him specifically to rely more on God than on himself. It showed him his limitations, and it checked his ego a little bit. And weakness only allows us to grow in grace when we're able to do those things too. When verse 9 says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness," I think it simply means that God is most present and most available when we don't rely on ourselves, but upon God instead. So I think this translates as well that being weak in the positive sense is recognizing that we're wrong sometimes, that we don't always know best, and that we can't ensure our future by our own power. To say that we can only grow in grace by being weak is to say that we can't grow without realizing first that God is alive and working in the world, and we don't always know what's best when it comes to participating in God's work. We need to be open to discerning what our role in God's work is and how God wants us to respond to that. I think to some extent this is the cardinal sin of Adam and Eve in the garden. They ate the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, hoping to decide for themselves what was right and wrong, how they should act, how they should live, instead of relying on God for those sorts of things. I think this is also a little bit the sin of the Pharisees as well. The Pharisees get a really bad rap in the New Testament, but sometimes I feel bad for them. I don't think it's entirely deserved. Religiously, they were excellent. They followed the rules, they sacrificed exactly what and when they had to. They observed every rule set down by their predecessors. They were entirely dedicated to God and their faith. But they lacked the kind of weakness that Paul's talking about here. They lacked grace. They couldn't stand to be wrong. That's why they always were trying to correct Jesus' teaching. They couldn't stand to have things change, even if it was God in person showing them how to. The Pharisees couldn't understand God's grace because they couldn't understand that God's love and kindness wasn't something to be earned, as they had thought before. And so they were rebuked and chastised often by Jesus. They couldn't grow in grace because they weren't open to being wrong. They had to know best, just like Adam and Eve in the garden. This meant also that they couldn't show God's grace to those around them. The Pharisees were often shocked by the kind of people Jesus spent time with, because they couldn't see how those sorts of people could have anything to do with God. They couldn't see how those people could fit in God's kingdom. Because they had such strict rules for themselves, they demanded that those who would come to God or take part in their religion be equally fit or equally stringent and dedicated as they were. Because the Pharisees didn't understand grace, the idea that God could pour unearned love and kindness upon all of God's creation, the Pharisees couldn't be lenient to others. They couldn't be open to welcoming different kinds of believers into their congregations or communities. And this is exactly what Jesus wants us to do. So while I was thinking about this, I came to the question, I wondered how much I might be like the Pharisees, or maybe all of us too. Are we too sure in our tradition, in our own way of doing things, in our own understandings, that we might miss the purpose of our faithfulness? The Pharisees were desperately waiting for a Messiah to come and to change their world. But when one did come, when Jesus finally arrived, they couldn't see the good that God was doing because it wasn't what they expected. Jesus didn't fit within the mold of what they thought he should be. Does our understanding of what it means to be faithful deter or reject others from being a part of our community of believers? Sometimes I wonder, too, if I would even recognize Jesus if he comes in my lifetime. Will I see the Messiah, or will I see someone who is so different from me, so different from the expectations I have of what it means to follow God, that I'd miss the whole point altogether? Am I any different from the Pharisees? Or have I become so set in my ways that I won't be able to see someone unexpected, someone unlike what I've previously decided should be as my Savior? Would we welcome Jesus into this church with open arms, or would we be convinced that he should change a little bit or be more like us before he can come in? And I worry these things because I am like the Pharisees in a lot of ways. I went to school to study my faith. I'm fairly educated. I'm deeply convicted about a wide variety of facets of my spiritual life. I try to do the right sorts of things that I think a Christian should do, and I try to be the kind of person that I think a Christian should be. And these are all things that the Pharisees did. So what's the difference between us? I think if we aren't able to grow in grace, if we aren't able to make that distinction between us and the Pharisees, to see God in new ways and to see God doing new things in our world, then the differences are troublingly small. If we can't be open to being wrong, if we aren't open to challenging traditions, to challenging beliefs, to challenging ourselves, then we might end up like the Pharisees too. Because of this, I'll go to the next slide. I try to see my faith and my faithfulness as a bridge. It's by this bridge that I get from the beginning of life to the end. It takes me over the sorrows and troubles of life, through the difficulties and the hardships, not always unscathed, not always happily skipping across. Sometimes the troubles are there, but it does get me from A to B. This is the bridge in Lethbridge, by the way. But while I'm building that faithfulness, that bridge, I'm reminded that bridges don't just need to be strong. They need to be flexible, too, in order to withstand high winds, floodwaters, or heavy weights. A strong and flexible bridge will outlast the brittle one every time. So let's say we come to a bridge just like this. We see the deep valley below, and we wonder, would it be strong enough to hit it with a hammer? And if it's not, if you don't think it would you still be willing to walk across? If you thought this bridge was too frail, too unprepared for a hard question or to hit it with a hammer, could you trust it to carry your weight from one end to another? In my opinion, this question is related to faith as well. If we aren't willing to hit our faith with a hammer, if you're willing to play along with me here, to ask hard questions, to do new things, to stretch ourselves a little bit, can we trust our faith to get us from one point in life to the next? We need to build up our bridges, to build up our faith, so that we can trust them to carry us even through the unexpected. The problem with the Pharisees' faith is that they built really specific bridges. They were well built in almost every sense of the word, but they weren't flexible. They weren't capable of adapting to the new revelations that God was putting into their world in Jesus. Their bridges were excellent for a world where God wasn't alive, where God wasn't changing things, where God wasn't still working to save all of us through salvation. If everything were to have remained the same, the Pharisees would have had very little to worry about in the temple system. But Jesus did come, and God did change the world by doing that. And so their bridges and their faithfulness failed them. Growing in grace is being open to new changes, being open to new works, to new ways of doing things, and to new ways of following Jesus and being faithful. It's being willing to test out our bridges, even if it's a little scary. Now, I don't mean to say that this means we need to throw all of the old and traditional out, because that isn't sustainable growth. We don't have to be constantly changing everything about our church so that we fit in with today's society. We don't need to be popular. I don't think that that's a faithful way to grow, because there's immense value in tradition and history. When a tree grows, it doesn't discard the old growth. That says back to the trees. Where was I? Sorry, I just lost my place here. When a tree grows, it doesn't discard the old growth. In fact, even the dead parts of the tree remain significant as far as structural value goes. The very center of the tree, this dark red portion here, is called the heartwood. And it's the structural core of the tree, but it's composed entirely of dead cells. That part of the tree isn't living anymore. All of the growth on the outside of the tree, all of the vibrant life, all of the beautiful colors in fall and spring, all of the flowering and fruit, all of that is sustained by what's come before. And it's supported by what came before. So when we grow, I don't think that we need to leave the things of the past behind. And in this way, our church also needs to be like a tree. We need to grow in grace like a tree. We can't grow without considering and valuing and remembering that which has come before us. Our roots are not only in Jesus, as Gary talked about last week, but they're also in all of those people who have been influential in this church over the last 90 years. Our growth as a church has to be faithful to the legacy left behind by those before us, but also open to the new. And this is also our task personally as Christians, I think, on a smaller scale. For our church as a whole to grow in grace, we all need to continue to grow in grace as well. That never stops being our job. It's our job to grow ourselves while remaining faithful to who we've been in the past as well, and also work at discerning God's work in the world so that we can grow as a community. So we need to balance our convictions and our traditions and our history with the work that God's doing now. We need to struggle with how we can be faithful to our past, to our roots, to who we are individually and as a church, with who we need to be, with our future, and with our branching out into the community and in the world. In order to grow in grace, we need to resist the urge to be like the Pharisees, to be set in our ways and our convictions. But we also need to be faithful to that which has come before us so that we can have the support and strength and guidance that we need to grow. There's no single formula that we can follow for every age and every culture and every society. We need to work out what it means to be faithful as Coaldale Mennonite Church in 2018. And next year we'll need to do the same thing and continue to grow and ask what it means to be faithful to our God in 2019. And so on until our 150th anniversary comes along and my kids are saying the same thing. Anything less to risk is to risk becoming like the Pharisees. The work of growing in grace is never ceasing, because if we do stop, if we decide that we're good and we have all the answers, if we start to think that we do know best, we risk missing the point of God's work of salvation in this world from the beginning. So I had planned to conclude this sermon by talking a bit more about how we can grow. I thought I ought to give us some specifics so that I wouldn't leave you all with vague feelings and ideas about growing in grace. But I don't think I can really tell you how you need to grow. That's work that we all need to do, individually and together. I said earlier this morning that growth is hard work for all of us, and I really meant it. All I can offer is that we shouldn't be growing alone. We shouldn't be struggling with the hard questions alone. We shouldn't be doing the work of growing in grace alone. Whether it's at morning prayer time on Wednesdays, or fellowship events like Soul Sisters, or while we're talking and making decisions at congregational meetings. The work of growing in grace, of finding out what it means to be faithful in the here and now, as Christians individually and as a church as a whole, is work that we all need to do together. So I can't conclude with easy answers, because that would miss the point. But I can give a little encouragement. This picture of a tree that I've been flashing back and forth through isn't just a pretty filler. It's a picture of an olive tree that I took while I was in Jerusalem. This tree is growing on the spot that many believe is the site where the Garden of Gethsemane used to stand. While we were here, our guide told us that this tree could be close to 500 years old. Some olive trees can even grow to be 2,000 years old. And they do this because as the tree ages, as it begins to die, the old wood at the center of the trunk, that heartwood, decays and falls away. And this makes room for new shoots to grow up and out of the old tree. In this way, it's sort of the same tree because it's using what was there before for structural support and for nutrients and for a root system. And yet it's something new and full of life and growth and change. It has ancient roots and tradition, but it's still vibrant and changing and growing and producing good fruit today. I think this tree is a good example for all of us of what our church can be like. We can continue to grow, faithful to the roots that we have, to the traditions that we have, and still be a growing, vibrant community within our world and within our community.